brought to you by bedroombattlefield.com. This is the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. Mark, welcome back to the podcast. I see in the recording software you've called yourself Matthew Corbett, presumably not after Sooty's Best Pal, but I was talking about some novels that I liked this morning, so
yeah,
I'm assuming
I want to know a bit more about this guy, because the only Matthew Corbett who's on my radar is Sooty's Best Friend. But who's the Matthew Corbett you've been reading?
Yeah, so my favourite author of all time, an author I discovered maybe 15 or so years ago, Robert McCammon, American author, who has a lot of brilliant books, but I've been reading his series, Matthew Corbett, set in the colonial American period, like start of the 18th century. And it's like, he's a detective, but the term detective doesn't exist at that time. And it's just a great book series. I think I read the first one about 10 years ago and kind of burned my way through them, caught up. And, you know, when you have to wait like every other year for a book to come out. But that is the last in the series. And I'm just finishing it up. So, like, definitely my favourite book series of all time. By definitely my favourite author. So I would thoroughly recommend that to any of the listeners who are partial to a wee bit of the old reading. He also did another shorter series that I would recommend. It was one about a werewolf who is like a World War II like action hero, secret agent. Sounds terrible, but it's actually brilliant. Was that called Wolf's Hour? Wolf's Hour, yeah. So, check that out too. World War II werewolves.
Excellent. That's a bit different. I've just actually renewed my Audible account because they do that thing where you play the game of like waiting until they go, all right, you can have an offer, and you always get one. I've just renewed that for another 3 months. So I'll probably queue up one of those first books. Are they on Audible, the Matthew Corbett ones?
Yeah, you'll find them on Audible, yeah.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, you'll get them there.
Excellent.
So once you finish up 50 Shades of Grey, that's you set up for your next lesson.
Absolutely.
Yeah, from 50 Shades of Grey to, what was the game I saw that you were trying out recently?
Yeah, it's called Midgard Heroic Battles, and it's a non-BDSM-based game system.
I'm out.
So it's it's fantasy and historical battles with the emphasis on the heroics. So you have an army of about 100 figures a size, something like that. And in that, there'll be generally three heroes, each commanding a contingent. So there'll be, you know, three units and they've got a hero and another three units with a hero and so on. And that hero is able to do quite a lot to influence the battle. But they're also rewarded for going in for single combats, calling people out for challenges, leading charges. So doing kind of mighty deeds and things that are, brave, but maybe slightly impetuous or stupid. So it's a game system that's based on that sort of very medieval and earlier mindset of, you get to be king by winning the battle and leading from the front. So it's quite a cool system. It's developed by this guy called James Morris, who's he's got a web like a blog called Mogsy Makes. That's a really good blog. A lot of people probably will have seen that, and you know, he's got loads of things on there. But he's a prolific guy. He did a lot of the he got involved in doing stuff for Warhammer Ancient Battles when that was out, and he's written other supplements and other things as well. He's just one of those people who's in the hobby and always attends shows and gets involved in stuff. He was demoing the game at Partisan when I last went in May, and I was talking it through with him and he was telling me about it coming out. So I pre-ordered it and got it for Christmas, essentially. And it's a really good rule set. I mean, obviously, it's got a lot of things in it that are in other rule sets, and, you know, it borrows a bit of Dragon Rampant here and a bit of Warhammer there and a bit of something else here. But it's bringing it together in an interesting way. And the feedback so far from the game, from different gamers that I've seen, has been really positive, both people using it purely historically and people using it from a kind of pure fantasy point of view. It seems like it does sort of anything in between. So I'm looking forward to playing it out. I just had a bit of a test game of it, a floor hammer game the other day, just in the living room, because it uses specific base sizes. So you put your models on a base, a bit kind of Kings of War-ish, you know, so there's kind of fixed base sizes. They're very straightforward. They're just 12 centimeters wide. Doesn't really matter how deep they are. So everything's just based on this 12 centimeter measurement. That's what's classed as a spear throw. So it's a bit like in Song of Blades and Heroes. It's just kind of a standardized measurement, and you can use it for that. So if you want to play it in smaller scale, you could just reduce it down, put more models on the base. It doesn't really matter, but it's just it's all based on that 12 centimeter thing. Yeah, it seems really good at the moment, but I just need to have a proper game of it in earnest, really, to kick the tires and see what it actually does. But I mean, I was slightly reticent to get it in a way because it's another rule system. Do I need another rule system? Do I need that? And the answer is probably not. But, you know, it's good to support people who are putting stuff out. It's a real work of passion for him. He's been working on it for years. And you just think, actually, it is an interesting take on it. And I really like the way that the leadership and the heroics work and the command and stuff. That is really different. And I think it will play out really well.
So you have played Dragon Rampant, haven't you? Yeah,
I've played a lot of Dragon Rampant, actually, probably more than anything else. And I do really like it, but it has got limitations. You know, it's very fun, but it's not necessarily the best game, in inverted commas.
I mean, you played Kings of War as well. You ever had a game of that?
I've played once. I did like it, but the only thing... it's a while ago, so that's probably not really helpful. But the thing that I perhaps got a little bit stuck with was it felt, I don't know whether, I know Alessio Cavatori's spoken about this and spoken about his game design philosophy, and I understand it, but about that idea of taking as much out as you possibly can and making it as clear as possibly can. But it just felt a little bit board gamey for me, I thought. Mm-hmm. I just felt it was a little bit abstracted. And you might as well have just written the name of the unit on the rectangle in a way. Mm-hmm. That was my only thought on it. I don't know. It just didn't feel necessarily like a unit of cavalry clashing with a unit mm-hmm. of a big unit of infantry. It felt more like a rectangle and another rectangle and lots of dice. But that might be that's probably on me to some extent as well, because I was perhaps coming at it with only having played Warhammer before. So, you know, kind of like, oh, wow, it's so much quicker. But it was almost too quick that it didn't perhaps seem as enough of a simulation for what I wanted at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess these games are all offering something unique, aren't they? Even if that's subtle. Like, I mean, you've played those massive games of Warhammer with Jason and everyone, which, you know, will be just bursting with flavour and narrative and story and the nostalgia factor as well, you know. And then, you know, Kings of War, it has its place. Some might see it maybe as a wee bit clinical, wee bit sterile even. But I guess, you know, again, people are coming to the table for all sorts of different reasons, aren't they? And one person might really like one system and just not like the other and vice versa. But it's great to have these options, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. I think the other side of it is probably that there's a little bit of, I think I go into things with sometimes some preconceptions that are maybe unfair. And I think because I'm not naturally particularly competitive, anything that describes itself as being good for tournaments or good for competitive play or used in competitive play, I tend to be a bit dismissive of it, which probably is a bit of a failing on my part because, you know, all sorts of things can be competitively played, but also played with enjoyment as well. So that's probably a preconception as well. Just when I see that word tournament or when I see that word competitive, it kind of makes me go, oh, I won't like this, which, you know, it's probably a bit mad, really.
So you reckon that, I mean, you own both Dragon Rampant and what's the name of it? I keep forgetting it. Midgard, yeah. I'm sure I saw it in a Miniature War Games mag just this month, maybe?
Yes, it probably was.
Somebody had talked about it, maybe a Lord of the Rings scenario or something like that.
Yeah, the one that there was demoed at the Partisan, they run two Partisan shows, one in May and one in October. And the one that was run in October that I didn't go to was a Battle of Five Armies Hobbit game, massive game, and they'd drawn a background that looked like the drawing of Mount Doom. Is it Mount Doom? I don't know if it's Mount Doom. It's the mountain on the front of that book. And it looked really cool. It might have been that that was in Miniature War Games. I think it's really getting a lot of attention, and I think it's getting attention because it's satisfying both the historic gamers and the fantasy gamers at the same time, which is probably a relatively rare thing.
Yeah, for me, it's Hobgoblin, obviously, that I'm kind of hoping to get really into. Like, I've got my armies pretty much finished now. Hoping to invite the good doctor over in the next couple of weeks for a wee game as well.
Excellent.
So I've written up the army list. They've got a really good, there's a really good army builder.
I tried that. I mean, it's very good, isn't it? It's really fast.
Yeah, and it stores it for you. So, like, you go back in there, it's just your army's there, you know, if you create an account, so you can tweak it and that. So I really like that. Like, I've no intention of using a computer or phone at the table, but I'll print it out. I'll print the sheets out. So, yeah, I think I'll do the same before that game. I am literally just going to have a scaled-down game with some card footprints to represent the units. I just want to go through a couple of turns.
Yeah,
I find, like, once I've done that in my head, it all, I could read it like 1,000 times and I think I know everything, but like, just to go through the process and the movement and the combat and that kind of,
yeah, that's
just
really
clicks.
Important. There's a thing in actually that's quite interesting. There's a thing in Dragon Rampant that's to do with how you do a morale test, and you have to do them, you know, a lot, and you do it when you've lost casualties or whatever, and you know, you roll two dice and then you do this and you minus off this many things. And the way it's written in the book does sound really complicated, but the more often, if you just do it through a few times, you just go, oh, okay, I get it. But I still find it really hard to explain to anyone, and I don't think it's very well written in the book, but I don't know a better way of explaining it. And I think that sometimes you need to actually have just almost just put it into your mind that you're confident that you know how to do it, so that when you see Dr. Spork and you can go, right, this is Hobgoblin, this is how it works, even if you can just show it happening, that's kind of good enough, isn't it?
Yeah, he was saying as well that he's going to check out a few videos and that beforehand, so he's not coming in completely cold, so that'll be handy too. But I imagine, given that, you know, the way Hobgoblin is sold is quite a quick game.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that we might be able to do two or even three games. So, you know, the first game might be a bit of learning the ropes, and then we could maybe switch sides and probably know a bit more about what we're doing, try some other things, more adventurous things maybe. So
yeah, that's a good idea, actually. I think that's definitely the disadvantage of a system like Warhammer or something, is, you know, you kind of, once you're in, you're doing it for a few hours. So, yeah, if you're going into that, probably as we all did when we were kids, a bit, you know, without the real knowledge or the understanding of what you're doing, you can feel a little bit overwhelmed. Whereas something, yeah, Hobgoblin, that definitely looks like an advantage, that you can just kind of have a go at it and go, even if you do something wrong, it doesn't matter. You can kind of rewind it and have another go. It does look really good. I'm chatting to Ed because at some point he and I are going to meet up and have a go on it. So I used the Army Atlas Builder just to draw something up based on the stuff I've got painted, and yeah, it's quite easy, isn't it, to overspend the points? Because I was finding that, and it was interesting because it made me go, okay, so it is fast and deadly and brutal and stuff, but if you load up all your units and make them great, then you run out of points too quickly. So actually it's quite neat because you're going to have to take some crappy stuff to make sure that you've got enough on the table. So I found that quite enjoyable as well.
Yeah, it was one of my armies ended up like with vastly more points than the other one. I filled them both out initially just as what made sense based on the models.
Yeah.
And then I looked at the points comparison and I had to make up like 800 points. So I ended up with this one unit of like exceptionally roided up guys because like I needed to compensate. So, but a really good app, because that's, and I know some people like the sort of pen and paper aspect to the list build, and I would have enjoyed that too, but just the fact that app is available just made it really easy, you know. Just to sit with a cup of coffee and plan it out. So
I agree. I was a bit cynical about using that, and I think, oh, I'd rather do it with pen and paper, but I think that actually, if you're doing it for pen and paper for an older game, like if you're doing it for Warhammer 4th edition or something, there's something quite fun about that because it gives you that nostalgia for what it was like when you did it before. But if it's for a new system, there, you know, I think that using an app, so there's an app someone's developed for Midgard as well, you know, just a community member and just shared it on there. The One Page Rules app is good because I tried that out when I was having to go One Page Rules regiments, and that was But it was quite a lightweight, quite neat thing. And it felt, it didn't feel like it was bogging you down in the technology. Like you say, it just felt like a quick way to get to a printout sheet that you can then put your phone away, put your devices away, and then kind of still got paper and it for the game, but you've created it more quickly.
Speaking of like big mass battle games, then like what's the status with you guys getting together, playing your next big game, or even having any other sort of meetups in the pipeline just now?
Yeah, absolutely. So the next steps, really, the next thing is we're looking at a game state. So we've done sort of essentially, if you think of them as being kind of in a series, because they kind of are, because the story has evolved on from one to the next. So the first one was just there was the baggage train raid. And then the next one was the raid on the port city. So we did those in April and October in 2024. So we're looking at running something in April or May this year, which will be hopefully a bit of a spoiler. I'll give this away. Jason might kick me for giving away the secrets. But the idea is we're going to do something with a naval aspect. So potentially full-scale 28-millimeter boats, kind of man-of-war ships in 28 mil. And there are some ship rules in Warhammer. And also you could theoretically use the man of war rules and just scale up the rulers and the measurements and so on. But the idea of boats arriving at a big island and people getting off and then teams of more like a skirmish going on. So rather than a big battle in the sense of huge regiments, more that you've got ships with troops disembarking, getting onto the island, a bit Mordheim-y, running around trying to get treasure and looking for a particular individual piece of treasure, which is said to be on this island, which was the kind of conclusion of our last game in terms of the story, that there was something found in this evil wizard's tower that meant that on this island there was more stuff to be found. So that's kind of the story behind it. So that's the idea, that one will take place on a very water-based big table with a quite decent sized island in the middle, but more like a standard war game sized table, but in the middle of this big seascape. And then for the games day four that should be in the autumn, then we're looking at different ideas, and that will be shaped by the outcome of that. But you know, we're thinking, well, okay, we've done a baggage train raid, we've done a ship raid, you know, a port raid, we've done different things. What would work? And it might be a siege, it might be a big pitched battle. There's loads of different opportunities. So they're the sort of two big events that we're looking at. I know that a couple of weeks ago, no, last weekend, in fact, Jason ran an event in his local village hall that Ed attended, a 40K event, playing all editions of 40K and showing off different things. That looked great. I wasn't able to get there, but that looked brilliant. Jason and I are looking at meeting up at some point to play a game of another Warhammer in Weatherspoon's Spoonhammer game, which should be fun, partly to use as our planning session for our Games Day 3, but also just a fun opportunity to meet up. Like I said, I'm hoping to meet up with Ed to do a bit of Hobgoblin, and then looking to go to Bring Out Your Lead in August, assuming that's taking place, which should be fantastic.
Yeah, I think we're all keeping our eyes on that weekend, waiting on any news confirmation. I guess there's a bit around the venue and maybe a transitional period there, but hopefully that does take place. For anyone like listening in the UK that's really interested in keeping up to date with like where these games are happening, and maybe even making it along to one, what's the best way to kind of follow along?
Yeah, on the Discord, really. So if you hop onto the Bedroom Battlefields Discord, that is, there's, you know, it's a, you know, for people who haven't really used Discord, it might be, oh, well, I don't know if I want to get involved in that conversation, but you can just join just to sort of follow along, really. You know, you don't have to directly contribute too much by any means. That's a good way just to catch up on there. We've got a channel on there that's UK Games Days. So that's a good place to just check in and find out what's going on. So, and we also, we want to make it very democratic. So, for example, we ran a poll last time, you know, when do you want to meet? What days work best for you? Whether it's Saturday, Sundays, weekdays, whether it's, you know, March, April, May, whether it's, you know, we sort of said, well, where's best for you? Like south of Milton Keynes up to Leeds, or Leeds north type of thing, dividing the country up into three bands. We can't make it work for everyone, but we want to make it work for as many people as possible. And we don't mind taking things on the road. I know that Jason's going to be taking something up to Bring Out Your Lead, so that's another point to come along. So we're just trying to really put out as much as possible because, you know, in organizing these things, and, you know, huge credit to Jason, who's essentially, you know, bringing the 90% of all this stuff and putting most of the prep in. But that's the, you know, what it's allowed us to do is just meet people, have fun, and we want to do more of it. So, yeah, getting the word out and getting people involved and getting people having a look is definitely the best places on the Discord, really. And if you want to make a suggestion, or if you're in a different country and you say, well, you know, I want to get involved and do something over here, like, but maybe that ties in, that'd be fantastic as well. So loads of opportunities to get involved.
Yeah, bedroombattlefields.com/discord is where you'll find that. Speaking of the Discord as well, we did our Santa Night Fever Secret Santa in December. I think there was 40-odd people took part in that, which was amazing.
Was there? Like, that's brilliant. I didn't know it was that many.
Yeah, a lot of people. So just whilst you're getting in trouble with the police there.
Yeah, I'm in downtown Manhattan at the moment, in my office. So it's pretty noisy.
Our question of the month for January is, tell us about your favourite named character on the tabletop. Maybe it's the overconfident warrior who always charges headfirst into danger, or the sneaky rogue who somehow always survives by the skin of their teeth. Perhaps you've got a hero with a legendary backstory, or a character whose misfortune has become a running joke. No matter who or what your named character is, tell us all about where you got the miniature, how you came up with the name and backstory, and any funny or memorable moments that you've had with them. Submit your clip by going to bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail, and I need them in by Thursday the 30th of January. So we had our, we've got a dedicated channel for this. There's obviously, there's too much stuff to like go through, but it's well worth a look if you're in there. You know, most people posted up photos of the things that they got. What did you get and what did you send out, Mark?
Yeah, so I sent out a miniature that I bought a little while ago that was an old Grenadier miniature that I found on eBay, and it was just like going for like barely any money. It was like a Chaos Warrior. It was really cool. I bought it just because I saw it, and it was like, it was one of these auctions that was ending in about 40 minutes, and I just put like, you know, a small bid on it, and I happened to win it. I was like, okay, that's wicked, but I wasn't really going to use it for anything. And then about a day later, you announced that you were going to do the Santa Night Fever thing, and I was like, do you know what, this is perfect for that, because this is just, it's an unusual thing that might work. And then I drew Ed in the random generator, and you sent me his details. And so I thought, do you know what? I know he'd really like that. So I sent him that. I also bought a little picture frame, and I printed out the front. I can't remember what it's called now, but it's one of the supplements for Necromunda. I think it's called something like Outriders or Outlanders or something. But I know that that was the thing that he was really keen on. So I printed that out and put it in this little frame for him, because he'd just got this new hobby room. And I sent those things over to him. But I made the mistake of saying that I was Barry Gibb on the note that I included for him. And then he was opening his as you do, and he was opening his present and said, oh, I've got this picture here from Barry Gibb. And I said, oh, has Barry Gibb sent you anything else? And he's like, no, there's nothing else. And I was like, okay,
just the
packaging that's in your bin might have something in. So fortunately, the miniature was rescued, which is cool. So I'm looking forward to if Ed is able to paint that up and include that in a game that we play in the future. I'm looking forward to seeing that. But on the receiving end, I received some absolutely wonderful wood elves. So there were some war dancers, and there was some, I'm not 100% sure if they're way watchers or scouts, I think I've sent either 10 or 12 wood elves by somebody. I don't know who it was, a mysterious benefactor. And all I can say is thank you very much indeed. They're absolutely fantastic, and I'm really looking forward to painting those up as part of my big wood elf project. Although my painting is slightly on hiatus at the moment because I managed to chop my finger up over Christmas. But they're absolutely amazing. So thank you to whoever sent those over.
Did you never find out who it was then?
No, they remain a mystery.
Truly a secret Santa.
Absolutely, yeah. So hopefully it's not somebody who's, you know, a particularly shadowy individual who's it's going to cause me great harm in the future, but I suspect it's a benevolent person.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm just scrolling through the channel now. There was some incredible miniatures changing hands. And again, the criteria here was, I wasn't hoping to ask a lot of people. It was more just, the starting point was just find something that is lying there that you're probably never going to get around to painting and send it. But some people really they sent, very sought after, very expensive, I reckon, miniatures. It's good because these things are getting rehomed and they'll get a bit of paint on them. They'll get on the table, hopefully. So that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And correct me if I'm wrong. I looked this morning on Discord, but I haven't got it up here, so I'm not sure. But I believe that one of the miniatures or a couple of the miniatures have already been painted. I think Luke, who's Tramp on the Discord, painted up a couple of the ones that he was sent already over Christmas, and they looked amazing. So that's another side of it. It's looking forward to seeing people's painted receipts as well.
Yeah, I think I mentioned on the podcast before, Base out in Sweden offered to send me some 15 mil stuff, which was really cool. I didn't ask him to do that. He offered. But I also paired myself up with JCB, with John, because he was out of the UK at the time.
Yes.
So he very kindly got me a Manticore from Ralph Arthur, which is really cool.
Yes, I saw that. That is an amazing model.
I've just ordered, I think it was Christmas Eve I put in an order and it's just been dispatched now. So Ralph Arthur, they're not the quickest, but I've got like a really cool sort of Chaos Champion to ride the Manticore. Excellent. And I reckon I might try and stick some wings on him as well, but he'll work really well at 15 mil scale, I think.
Is he a 28 or a 15 mil model, or is it a bit unclear?
Yeah, I think it's one for that era where like things were just kind of 25 and
Yeah.
But it worked well at 15 for sure. And embarrassingly, I still have John's stuff to send out to him because he was, that was my excuse, he wasn't getting back to the UK for a while. So I've got a couple of wee things literally sitting in front of me in an envelope that I need to take up to the old Hermes shop. But it's been really cool to do that. Really, really nice to see all these miniatures moving about. And like I say, that'll maybe fast track them towards getting on the table. Some of these guys will have been sitting in drawers for 30 odd years, I suppose. So
yeah, absolutely. Some action. I think that's what's really cool is that the whole idea of, of miniature collecting, what I really like about it is it's not so much about collecting for collecting's sake. It's most people seem to really embrace it for collecting to and painting to use, because there is that end goal. We're not just modeling things or putting models together. We are gamers in the main. And so as a result, there's a real sense of purpose. And then you can look at a model that's been sat there and think, do you know what? I'm going to give that to someone else because I really want to see them play with it. So, yeah, that's been a really cool side of it. It was a great idea to run it. Hopefully, we're planning on doing it again.
Yeah, we'll see what Barry Gibbs says. I mean, obviously, it's his name on the project.
Yeah, he's licensing it. Presumably, a huge cost to you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he will get all the miniatures sent to him once they're painted as well. So.
Oh. That was a bit unclear in the T's and C's, that was the small to be print. Honest. We have to offer them to him at like a harvest festival, like he's just sat on a throne.
Dressed as a manticore.
Sounds good, actually, yeah.
It's a fever dream. any other painting? You said you hurt your finger, so you're out of action with the old painting. Do you think you'll be super rusty when you finally get back to that?
No, it's not too bad, actually. I mean, I did really, really bugger it up. So I picked up a broken shard of a plant pot, just grabbed it with my hand. And the next thing I knew, I was just blood pouring out of my hands. I was in my pyjamas in the garden at like 7 in the morning. And I don't know why I decided to do it. I just, I'm going to clear up that mess. It was, when a plant pot cracks because the frost gets to it. So it done that and I just went out and did it. And it's just made a right mess of it. So the next thing I knew was in minor injuries. And I took the dressing off a couple of days ago and it is healing, but I can't really bend my finger fully yet. So, and I tried to paint in a miniature. It's amazing how, I don't think you know how, it's my left hand, but that would be the hand that I'd hold things in. And I'm just not gripping stuff properly. So I need to get back on it. I think I will. I'm in the Call of the Crown challenge that David's organising, so I may have to take my mulligan. You get a free mulligan that you can use for 1 month if you need to pass on it. So I may have to take that, or I might be able to, in the final week of the month, kind of just get across the line a few models and at least count in. But I'm looking forward to getting back to it because I've missed it, actually. It's really become part of my routine. And not having done it over Christmas and for a while, it's been annoying. I'd flu over Christmas as well, which was a bit grim. So, yeah, it's just I've not really been painting, but I'm really looking forward to getting back to it. This probably from this weekend onwards, I'm going to give it a crack.
Yeah, it must have been it was a proper comedy like bandage. I guess the injury wasn't comedy itself, but a big like sort of like in Viz, you know, in the cartoon strips when somebody's hurt themselves and it's like a comically large bandage. What do you reckon? Did you lose more blood in this accident or the time you stood on your white dwarf ring binder? Like what?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question, actually. They didn't ask me that in A&E. No, I reckon I think I probably lost more blood here, actually. It was really bad. And my wife was quite annoyed at me for having done it. And I was going, no, it's really bleeding badly. She's like, it's not that bad. And then she wouldn't look at it. But then when she saw that the sink looked like it was in like the scene from Carrie, then at that point it was like, okay, we'll go to the hospital. She can't drive, so I just had to drive while holding my hand upright and permanently like giving every single passing motorist the bird. which was an interesting twist on it, but yeah, the white dwarf ring binder incident, that was pretty grim.
Yeah, very painful sounding. Yeah, so hopefully that's not one of these three, what is it, these things come in threes, although we are talking a good 30-year gap there, aren't we?
So yeah, oh, no, there's been loads of disasters over the last few weeks anyway. Yeah. So, you know, it's like they don't come in threes, they just come in multiples.
They come in 30s.
Yeah, 333s. So yeah, that's just life, just trying to get in the way and stop you from playing with toy soldiers.
Yeah, I've been plugging away myself. I'm working on a wee solo game now, so taking a break from the old Star Squabble. Got that to a stage where I'm pretty happy with, but I think there's a lot of benefit in sometimes putting something away for a month or two and coming back to it with fresh eyes. And I started this solo rule set. So
excellent. Again, is it got a kind of theme or a direction or something that you're trying to make it do?
Yeah, so I took an idea from Star Squabble. I don't know if I came up with this or if it exists elsewhere, but basically, and I use a 4x4 playing mat.
Right.
And I quartered it up into zones. So zone A, zone B, zone C, and zone D. And the initial reason for that was deployment reasons. And
okay.
Being able to say, like, this happens in zone A, this happens in zone B, etc. So with this solo scenario, it started out, so I took five what I called heroes, like the five players that I'm in control of, the five miniatures, and we started on the corner of zone A and had to fight my way through to the corner of zone D, so okay, diagonally across the board. And obviously you've got zones C and B are on the periphery there. And each zone had spawn points for NPCs. There were two levels of NPC, grunts and enforcers. So the enforcers were fewer, but definitely better, more difficult to take down, and they hit you harder as well. So from that starting point, I worked away at, you know, how it works, things like ranges, things like target numbers for shooting and wounds, and just played a couple of sort of vanilla games and was always tweaking things. But the eventual idea was to create scenarios for it rather than just being can you get from here to there? And by the way, when I was doing that, I was keeping my game clock as well. So
okay,
I was rolling a D6 at the end of every turn. And 28 was kind of the number I was interested to see if that would be you're wanting it not to be impossible, but you're wanting it to be challenging.
So it's a cumulative target that you're adding up to. And if you hit
so
that number, then the time is gone.
It's game over. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And I will create this as one of the scenarios in the game where.
Yeah, I like it's 28. That's cool.
That was totally unintentional as well. But yeah, you're right. I never noticed that. And yeah, the narrative with something like this is, you know, you're a squad that's missing, presumed dead, and your army have left the city, and they're going to flatten the city, basically, and you're just trying to escape before that happens. So I have, at the moment, I've been working on a bunch of new scenarios, because I think the real value in solo games, like, what I've discovered over the past year is, like, putting some mechanics together. I know you could do it brilliantly, but you could at least do it passably, but I think the value is in given scenarios, yes. I think, especially when it comes to solo games. You know,
I agree,
you couldn't
yeah.
just repeatedly play that. So what I've come up with here is 7 different scenarios I'm working on. So I've got one of them, which is rescue the high value target, which could be a hostage or an item. Basically, you know, find a person or an item and get it off the table. I've got to beat the boss, where I'm going to put a particularly tough to take down NPC in Zone D, and he won't leave Zone D, so you have to fight your way there and kill him. Gather the data. So this is going to be there's different terminals, going to try and get up there and reach a cumulative score. These will be, like, as you get to these terminals, you'll roll and you'll add the score. And I think you're trying to hit 18 at that point have collected all the data. Destroy the spawn points is another one I'm doing. Escape against the clock is the one I've been playing. Search the buildings, I've got one around that as well. And then I've got a sort of tough challenge where it's called Out on Their Own. So I've talked about these different zones quartering up the table. So instead of 5 heroes, you've only got 4. One starts in each corner of the table, so they're completely on their own. So it's going to be, they're going to all have to assemble in the middle of the table for some sort of, say, pickup point or that. But with them being on their own, it's going to be quite difficult. So
that's cool. Yeah, that's nice. I think they tend to think about deployment as being you start in a space and then spread out. I like the idea of it all coming back together. That's cool.
Yeah, well, that was, again, when I divvied up the table like that, when I divvied up the board, that was a Star Squabble thing where instead of, you know, you start your guys over there, I'll start my guys over here, we were, I think I had it where we were rolling, you would roll the dice and it would tell you what zone you could deploy one miniature in, and you'd deploy any miniature in any area there. There were some criteria. So when we started the game, it was almost like, you know, in films or that, the film opens in the action scene. The film doesn't open with, like, the guy getting up in the morning. Yeah. So that was my ethos there, is like, let's, instead of like two warbands approaching each other gradually, let's just start in the middle of the chaos. You know, like, I could be right in front of one of your guys or whatever.
Yes.
And I think that worked quite well. Like, I know that's not for everyone and you wouldn't want every game to be like that, but I thought that was kind of just something different, if you like. I'm not saying no other games have done it before, but I'm managing to leave this set up at my work and I can just play a turn. Like, you know, if I've got half an hour or so before I'm doing something else, I'll just play a wee turn of it and I'll usually discover something that's just not quite right or something that could be made better. So I'm just taking my time. It's a very patient process, but really enjoyable.
That sounds brilliant. Are you going to share that in the Discord, in the playtesting thing, when it's ready?
Definitely. Like,
if wonderful.
And if yeah, I will. But if anyone at all wants to get a copy of this and playtest it, just let me know in the Discord. Yeah, I'll send them it. It'd be great to hear from anyone who's played it and get their thoughts. So, there's also, not to bang on about this, but there's an event target table at the end of each turn. So there's a D6 and a D12 in this game. So at the end of each turn, you roll a D12. And for example, like, you roll a 2, it says the hero nearest to the table edge of corner B. There's, like, the hero with the most wounds, the hero closest to any NPC. I've even got the hero with the best pose or the hero with the funniest name. So you roll on that and it determines, you know, which one of your characters is affected by something, and then you roll again on a secondary table, and that could be anything from stepping on a mine and getting 2 wounds to, you know, an NPC will spawn at your nearest spawn point. But there's advantages too, like you could heal a wound or you could gain some bonus turns as well. So I'll tailor those eventually. I'll tailor that event table to the specific scenarios, but at the moment that's the kind of like I say, the vanilla one.
Excellent. So, that sounds really good. It's always nice to have those kind of random events that happen, whether it's, you know, changes in the weather or, you know, or a magical effect that affects everyone and gets... Because I think that having the plans disrupted and having to deal with stuff in the moment is probably where tabletop game, like miniatures games, actually work best. Because you're not really playing a big, grand strategic game. You're playing something quite tactical and quite operational, aren't you, really? Mm. Even if it's an army game, it's still, you know, a few units or a few elements. So, yeah, having things that suddenly change and you have to go left when you thought you were going to go right, I always really enjoy that.
Yeah, I definitely, like, ever since I got into Rangers of Shadowdeep a couple of years ago, I've always, like, been obsessed with, like, event tables and that, and just the flavour and the chaos, and, yeah, you never quite know what's going to happen. So you have a plan, but it doesn't usually work out. But
as the best plan shouldn't.
Yeah, as best plan shouldn't, yeah. So, yeah, that's it for my gaming. Excellent. At the moment. But yeah, nothing much else going on at my end. Anything from you? Any sort of closing thoughts or?
I suppose just to kind of re-emphasize that idea of people, you know, getting together and playing games is definitely my focus for the, you know, if I kind of divide up my my perhaps, you know, few years in the hobby when I was a kid, kind of full of wonder and awe and just taking it all in and not quite knowing where I was going, and then my 2018 return through to about 2023, a lot of that was building up stuff, playing, painting, you know, not playing as much. But from 2014, that sort of next 5-year phase through to, you know, for the next few years, I really want to be just focusing on doing more stuff, playing more games, using the stuff I've got, and kind of consolidating and really getting into it. And, you know, I've got a bit more time. My kids are a bit older. It's a bit easier. And not everyone's in that position. I appreciate that's fortunate. But, yeah, if people want to play games, they want to get involved, they want to do stuff, if people are interested in meeting up, if people want to reach out and say, well, do you want to play a game and are you available? Then, you know, I want to make myself available to do that where I can. I know there's other people who are like-minded. So, yeah, please get involved on the Discord. Just jump in there. Don't be afraid. You know, it's kind of sometimes there's almost a social awkwardness around whether or not, you know, oh, well, people want to do this or whether they want to do that. I think we're all a very open-minded bunch of people. Certainly everyone I've met has been lovely and very easy to get on with and very relaxed. So yeah, jump in there and say if there's something you want to do or if you want to host something or you've got ideas or you just want to tag along and come and watch something, then please get involved.
Yeah, please do. Yeah, like I say, bedroombattlefields.com/discord is where you'll find the community. And I just want to give a shout out to the question of the month as well. We're in mid-January 2025. So currently we're asking about characters and stories on the tabletop, like any particular miniature. You gave them a wee name or her a wee name, and you know they've been involved in a few different memorable moments, either for good or for bad. So like myself and Dan had a conversation about that recently. So if you've heard that episode, and if you have any stories or memorable moments or fun characters in your games, please tell us all about them before the end of January, please. You'll get the link at bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail. You could send your audio in there. So will you be getting something in for that, Mark?
Yeah, I'm going to try to. I also just wanted to say I really like those Question of the Month episodes. I know they go down really well. They're really good. It's so interesting to hear different people's voices and different people's views. It's brilliant.
Yeah, and especially like somebody pointed out, the sort of international nature of it. Like yeah. The last one that we did, I think I counted like 10 or 11 different countries, which again is amazing. So
excellent. Global reach.
Yeah. So there you go. That's just about us, I think. Thanks again for joining me, Mark. We'll get you back on in February if you don't mind. Hopefully your thumb will be healed. It's not your thumb. Hopefully your big finger will be healed.
It's my middle finger, yeah. So I won't be constantly flipping you off.
Yeah. Cool.
Excellent. All right, take care. As ever, see you soon.
Cheers. Thanks very much for listening to this episode of the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. If you enjoy the show, then please do share it with someone else you think might enjoy it too. And be sure to check out our Discord community of like-minded hobbyists, which you could find at bedroombattlefields.com /discord. It'd be great to see you in there.